ground control to Major Tom.
Staunton wriggling his way to the post and right on the post. There are three there. It must be a try. Yes, it is. A second try for John Kelly. Now it's all there for the taking as Gloucester pick themselves up from underneath their own post. Tom.
Ground control to Major Tom.
This is Crotty. Oh yes, O'Gara is in! Another lead for Munster, and what a magnificent try!
Check ignition.
Fully controlled, oh, straight on! Now there will be no greater place in Munster history than the one reserved for the man who scores the special individual try.
Tom Savage of Three Red Kings. Tom, nowhere else to start, only Ireland's historic Test Series victory over Australia 2-1 down under. The Sydney decider didn't disappoint. You know, and I think on the balance of the three games, Ireland deserved their victory. I think losing the first match when we were somewhat, I suppose, below par, just didn't really hit our stride really in the first match, and we're a little bit off the pace. I think to win back-to-back games down under is no mean feat, and a really good achievement. I think the way they did it with that defensive effort in the last 20 minutes especially was indicative of a side that, number one, trust their defence, and number two, have really, really grown in confidence over the last 12 months and the last season.
Oh, it absolutely can't be sniffed at. You know, this is a fantastic win for Irish rugby. You know, I wrote there at the weekend that, like, this Australian side are an extraordinarily bad match for Ireland, for this Irish team under George Smith, the way that we've played historically and the way we're playing now. When I look at the scores over the course of the last 5 years of Ireland versus Australia, it's 108 to 102 is the combined score over the course of the last five games between these two sides. That's a converted try. There's very, very little between these two teams, because I think we're both bad matchups for each other. You know, the first test, Ireland came in, we were a little bit under par, like you said there, and we got beaten. You can't turn up under par against this Australian team, because they'll beat you. They've developed and they've got some very good forwards coming into that pack. They've got a settled back line. They've got key weapons that they can use back there. And, you know, to go down there and win, to get, you know, two games back to back there is, look, it's hugely impressive. And it's like, it really isn't to be sniffed at, you know, especially the way the reaction that you see from the Australian media, the Australian commentators during the season or during the series itself. You can tell there's been a perception shift in the way that Ireland are perceived by the Southern Hemisphere nations. I think coming into this test or this test series, Israel Folau was asked what he knew about Ireland, Irish rugby. He didn't really know all that much about it. You know, and I think that attitude was common enough that, you know, basically down in Australia, it's kind of the Bledisloe Cup or nothing. You know, they know about England, they know about South Africa. The All Blacks are obviously the main threat for them. But I suppose it was always just assumed that, well, Australia go on tour over there, Ireland win narrowly, that's what happens at home. Having a three-game series down in Australia to win it in the manner that Ireland did, it's a huge statement of intent from this Irish squad and management group. You know, I think it's a real impressive feat to show where this squad actually is in 2018. We're over 90 ranking points now for the first time ever, a solid second in the world by, I think it's three or four ranking points, maybe more. Like, that again is just, this is unheard of. Like, this is, you know, Ireland are solidly the second best team in the world behind the All Blacks. And that, you know, this is kind of new territory. And it's just, it's rare. It's not something that, you know, the likes of you and me, we've seen Ireland over the years being, you know, being anything from plucky underdogs to, you know, the golden generation where things were looking good, but we never really fully capitalized on that, I feel. Not that, you know, we won Triple Crowns, the Grand Slam, obviously. But that team brought us to this team where we've kind of just changed the game a small bit with regards to how Irish rugby is perceived worldwide. And I think that's very a hugely impressive feat. And especially because, like, Ireland, whatever about the bookies were saying, Ireland were coming into the series as the favourites. And to then actually go and, like, just to live up to that billing after losing the first test is the kind of thing that we're not used to, and long may it continue.
Yeah, certainly, Tom. And I just thought that last 20 minutes, we really were under the pump. We had conceded a lot of territory. We'd conceded a lot of possession. You know, Australia looked like they were going to get, or were going to force that score from somewhere. But I think, you know, we saw that resolve. We just saw that determination that, you know, Ireland were not going to be denied. And I thought the defence, especially Sexton, I thought, who was absolutely heroic, and no respect for his body. I thought some of the tackling by the back line was absolutely fantastic.
Oh yeah, look, those last 20 minutes at the end of a very, very long season, that's when, if there's excuses in your group to come up with a reason to lose, that's when they'll come up.
Yeah, you only have to slip off one shoulder, you only have to slip off one tackle. You know, it's such a fine margin at that point.
It is, and it's that's the point where if you're going to lose, you will. But you kind of have to have that, those standards, that you're not going to miss those tackles. You're not going to overload on one side. You're going to make. There's one moment. Well, there was a couple of moments, but the first minute that springs to mind is 75th minute. Kirkley Beale takes the ball back off a ruck. Israel Folau is lining up on his outside shoulder. He lines up a massive up and under into the backfield. Jordan Larmour is only after coming on, maybe at that point, maybe 10 minutes for Rob Kearney, who had a shoulder issue. A huge up and under. Israel Folau, one of the best aerial guys in the game. He's chasing down that line. Jordan Larmour is coming up for that ball. This is a huge moment for a young man who's had an absolutely just astronomical season. Just but it's not unheralded, because James Ryan has changed what it means to be unheralded at this level. But for Jordan Larmour, as a guy who was thinking about playing A rugby at the start of this season, to come in and to come up, take that ball under huge pressure from Israel Folau, that's massive stones from that young man. And to do that, and to do it so effectively, is just, you know, that's a small moment that tips the game in your favour. Then you're looking over at the other wing. Then you have Keith Earls making the tackle, and I believe it was Dwayne Hayley Petty, I believe. And then you have Bundyaki coming over, starting a counter ruck. Keith Earls getting up off his feet, counter rucking again, winning that ball back for Ireland. Then these are just like huge. They're huge small moments in a game that add up to the win. And those kind of standards, and those kind of, and that drive to do it after a long season, like, as in these lads, they've been on the go since July of last year, really, you know, to be on the go from there, like, pre, you know, 2 months of preseason, then a big long season, Grand Slam, all this other stuff, to be still having that defensive energy, and that still having that, you know, that grit and those guts to see it out at that point. Look, it says a lot of good things about them, you know, and it says a lot of good things about where they're going as a group heading into that World Cup next year.
Yeah, it certainly does. And look, Tom, one thing I thought was quite noticeable was the depth and the level of the replacements, you know, the standard of the replacements. Like, Jordy Murphy came in there for Peter O'Mahony, and look, he doesn't give you the same options with regards to work at the breakdown or in the lineout, but, you know, this is a guy who can't get his game who couldn't get his game at Leinster, who's moved up to Ulster. But again, a superb performance from him. We saw Larmour when he came on as well. Excellent. I suppose the only real positions that we do lack world class depth in would be in the case of both halfbacks. Now, hopefully, Carberry's move to Munster next year will alleviate some of the, you know, will help to bring him on in that position and give us another option there. Ross Byrne is obviously another one as well. But, you know, that's something we're going to have to look at going forward if we really are going to build this squad for 2019. No, not that we're going to build it, but that we're going to improve on the Rugby World Cup squad for 2019.
At this point, yeah, you're just kind of adding in the finesse details to your squad, you know. Scrum half, I think, is the one area now where there's a little bit of work to be done yet. But when you look at it, I think that Luke McGrath is the clear guy behind Conor Murray at this point. He was injured for this tour, which kind of upped the amount of minutes that Murray had to be entrusted with. But when you look at, you know, Luke McGrath is a Heineken Cup winning scrum half now. He's a guy who's got multiple caps himself. I think he's the number two guy. You know, I think that that's, you know, fairly set in stone, bar, you know, some massive push next year from someone. But it's the guy who's behind Luke McGrath, who's had a lot of injuries, you know. I think it's the guy behind Luke McGrath is where the real test is going to be. Is it going to be Marmion? Is it going to be John Cooney? Is it going to be somebody else? That's kind of they're the questions that are going forward now. So when you look at, you know, Jordy Murphy, you mentioned there, what a dream player he is to have on the bench. He can play six, he can play seven, he can play eight. He can carry the ball for you reasonably well. He can operate very well in the lineout. He's a very good defensive breakdown guy with regards to getting steals over the ball. He's not the, you know, I wouldn't say he's absolutely elite with regards to his offensive rocking, but what a player to bring on. He had a stormer, you know, to come in. He took the crucial throw for Ireland's try with that maul. Look, to have a fellow who can come in and perform like that, same with John Ryan, same with, you know, to have Ty Byrne coming in and performing as he did, huge energy, great impetus building in that game. It says a lot of good things about Irish rugby. Now, when I look at Ross Byrne, he's a fellow who's very unlucky not to get any minutes, but given how that game played out, that would have been an extraordinarily tough game to bring him in and expect him to seal it out. You know, that's the kind of thing that if that goes wrong, you've damaged the player. So I can understand him not getting any minutes there. But, you know, he'll get plenty of time. He's a very talented player. Joey Carberry as well will have all the time in the world next year to show what he's got as a starting 10 in multiple sequential games. So that's going to be the key for the build to the World Cup. Looking at those options at 9 down the depth chart and then looking at that, who gets that backup spot to Johnny Sexton. Joey Carberry is the guy in the box position at the moment, but we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, we certainly will. Look, Tom, just to go back to that last, the dying minutes of that game, we saw the interminable amount of time it took to eventually come to the conclusion that Jacob Stockdale did not make any contact with that ball, and the deliberate lock on was not non-existent, and wasn't there. Tom, we've seen some of the refereeing stuff over the test window in particular. It hasn't been good for World Rugby. There's been a lot of inconsistency, a lot of indecision. The sighting, the non-sighting of Tuingafu, the New Zealand prop, Tuingafasi, just. And we saw it in the Ireland-Australia game. Australia guilty of bringing down an Irish maul close to the line, a carbon copy of an offence the week before that saw a penalty try awarded and that saw Cian Healy sent to the bin. We saw the Folau incident, which he got the yellow card for, and while he was in the bin, Australia again, blatant offside directly in front of the posts, guy preventing Conor Murray from scoring a try, surely cynical and surely warranting worthy of another yellow card. But all in all, not a good test window for the referees, Tom. And you know, World Rugby has a credibility problem, but it certainly has work to do in that area to stamp out some of the inconsistencies that drive coaches bananas.
Yeah, look, refereeing is an extraordinarily tough job in 2018. It really is. Like, it's just everything is played at such a pace. The physicality, the athleticism, you know, and the technicalities of the stuff they're ruling on, I do not envy it in the slightest. That said, there was an awful lot of not errors, but just inconsistencies. It's a maddening thing. Like you said there, you know, when lads are looking at, the one thing that stands out to me as being just fairly blatant is the yellow card and penalty try for Cian Healy last week. And then the exact same thing happens in the exact same area of the pitch, you know, this week. And it's just a penalty. And that was in the aftermath of another thing that could have seen a yellow card before it. And like you said there, a guy sitting in front of the post at an offside position for during that yellow card period. But it was just, you know, it is maddening. And it is one of those ones that, you know, guys, they have to try out guys during these tours. You know, I think that, no referee that was refereeing at the weekend covered themselves in glory. you know, for any extended period. But you just have to hope that, you know, things will turn around as we get into the season, because, like, the more experienced referees get, the more tough days they have, the better they will come, or the better they'll become in theory. So it's just, you know, there's a lot of talk about the referee after the game, after that third test, and it's kind of not what we want to be doing, but it's just, you know, sometimes when you're making decisions like that, when in close margin games, the referee can't but have a big impact.
Yeah, they certainly can. Tom, the Folau yellow card, again, this has been doing the rounds in social media, you know, ad nauseum since the game ended, with the various cases being put forward. I saw Matt Williams throwing his tuppence worth in as well. You know, plain and simple, Tom, it was a yellow card, and, you know, he was lucky that it wasn't more.
Yeah, look, if you accept that it's a yellow, that it's a penalty, as I believe Matt Williams did, if it's a penalty, then it's a yellow card, depending on the landing. That's just the way it is. You know, the first challenge, Peter Manny had a bad landing, but I would have been hesitant to punish that, because the contact that came in the air happened when the ball was right there. The second one, for me, was something that could have also seen a yellow card, or maybe more, because of the pulling action on O'Mahony after the ball was gone. The third one was very similar, that there was an extent to destabilize him in the air. Now, when it comes to that, the lifter, regardless if he's lifting somebody, or like, and first of all, I've been caught using other people's terminology there. CJ Sander wasn't lifting Peter O'Mahony. He was acting as a jump assist. So when Peter O'Mahony was jumping, CJ Sander was bracing him in the air to extend his hang time so he would have a better time of getting the ball in the air. Now, in that situation, if you're in the air as a bracer, you're basically helping, you're assisting a guy with the lift. If that happens and you have a contact after the point of the jump, you will destabilize in the air. That's just, like, as in, and that is just the way that it is. So, Peter O'Mahony is a guy who takes restarts quite often for Ireland, but especially Munster. Oftentimes, he's using a one-person lift like this. He normally lands completely fine. In this instance, there was a lot of contact on him after the ball was gone in the air. When that happens, you will destabilize, because when you're in the air, you have no control over if you're pulled, or, you know, or if there's like weight put on you at the top of your jump, you're going to topple over. It's just the way it is. So it's like, you know, a lot of the attempt to pull blame onto CJ Stander, for me, is just bizarre, really. I'm not even sure what the point of it is, because if Israel Folau wasn't pulling at Peter O'Mahony after the ball was gone, there's no penalty, you know. And not only is there no penalty, Peter O'Mahony probably lands safely. That's why there's a penalty for that. So it just seems to me a very, just one of those things that you see in a lot of media these days now, trying to mitigate, well, why shouldn't there have been a yellow card? And then trying to almost apply this kind of odd version of common sense that works from a position of, well, there was no intent there. Look, the whole point of removing intent from these things, and this has been thrown out, you know, with the bathwater in the back of that Benjamin Fall incident last week, where World Rugby were bringing intent into it. The whole point of intent is that you can't read somebody's mind. Okay? So if, like, we don't know if Israel Folau was intending to destabilize Peter O'Mahony in the air to tip him over and hurt him. We don't know that. We can't read minds. What we can see is that there was action on him in the air that destabilized him. And at that point, it doesn't matter if he's being lifted by one person or assisted by one person or two people. If you're in a position like that where you've got points in the air and you're in the air and somebody destabilizes you on one end, you're going to topple over. If there's one person there, two people there, it doesn't matter. So you take intent out of it. Did he land dangerously? He did. You know, so we can see that whatever about intent, you may not have meant to do anything, but this is what's happened. It's a bit like if you're messing around with, you know, your girlfriend or your wife and you've got a hurley and you're going to go, well, I'm going to pretend to hit her with the hurley here for a joke, but you lose control and you hit her. It doesn't matter if you were just joking. The fact is that, you know, you've hit her a tap with a hurley and now she's pissed off. It doesn't matter what your intent was. The outcome is how they must referee it. And I think a lot, there's been a lot of the stuff that's been going on about outcome-based refereeing. And I think I've probably given out about this in the past, but I think that like it kind of twigged for me over the weekend, because somebody said to me, look, you can't actually read his mind whether what he was supposed to be doing up there.
No, it's totally subjective. You're opening up a whole new tin of worms then. Like, I mean, you have to break it down to facts, what did and didn't happen. The end result is Folau played O'Mahony in the air, whether he meant to or not, is irrelevant. O'Mahony came down, landed on his back, could have been seriously injured had he tilted a few extra degrees onto his neck. You simply can't have something as subjective as intent in the decision making process.
No, you can't, and this is something that I've been guilty of in the past. Oh, well, you know, he didn't intend to do it or whatever else, and it's just like it is one of those ones where you kind of just have to examine your own role, like in the media environment of what you're bringing in to a discussion on stuff like player safety. I mean, because it was just, it's one of those things you don't really think about, you know, when it comes to, oh, well, there was no intent. It's just something that you say that it's like, oh, well, there was no intent. He didn't mean to do that. But you don't know. And the fact is that whether he meant to do it or not doesn't have any bearing on what happened. It's not the outcome. You know, like as in I didn't mean to catch him in the jaw with my shoulder on that tackle. But it doesn't matter. He's knocked out, you know, and it's like you have to kind of, well, go beyond intent. And you know what? I'm going to challenge for this in the air. But you know what? Once the ball is gone, I'm not going to touch this guy in the air because I got a yellow card for that last time. Now we've taken intent out of it because now, you know, well, last time I got a yellow card for this and it cost us big time. So I'm going to take us out of it. When I'm challenging for this, I'm going to leave it. I'm just going to go with that, you know. And it's like you can look at, you know, lifts, because I've seen people looking to try and twist themselves into these weird shapes to try and justify Folau not getting a yellow card. Oh, well, he should be, you know, we should ban single guy lifts in open play. It's just like we should, and like it's like you're kind of again trying to reverse engineer from a position of not liking a yellow card into having a dramatic rule change just for the sake of, oh, well, you know, DJ should have, you know, caught him in midair. Or, like, it's like, if you've ever been on a jump, or if you've ever, you know, been assisted like that on a jump, if there's contact and you're in that position, you're going to tip over in the air. It's just physics. It's just the way it works. And sometimes you'll get lucky, and that you'll be able to catch yourself and, you know, flick yourself around, and you land on your feet, and we go, oh, well, that was close. But sometimes you'll go, your center of gravity will tip over. And at that point, it's just, you know, close the eyes and hope everything works out all right once you land. It's just that, like, and it's just the way it goes. We want to see aerial contests, because if you're going to say that you must ban single player lifts, then in that case, because the same thing can happen whether or not there's any lifters there or not, you also then have to consider banning jumping in open play. And then you're into just this ridiculous standard, which basically is, hey, look, don't play guys in the air after the ball is gone. There won't be penalties. You won't get yellow carded. There will be rugby collisions, but he clearly pulled them after the ball with his hand. And it's as simple as that. And it's like, I don't see what the controversy is. You know, I think some prominent Irish journalist there during the weekend, I think it was Rory O'Connor, could have been somebody else, I'm not sure, was just basically saying that it was a bit of, you know, Israel Folau was being punished for his athleticism. It's like, I don't see it that way personally. I see it that, you know, if Tadhg Furlong decided to pick up Samu Karevi and powerbomb him, that would also be athletically impressive, but it would still be a penalty, just as this is a penalty, because he played him after the ball was gone, destabilized him in the air, and then that then is a dangerous tackle. It's reckless then, and it's a yellow card. He wasn't red carded. You know, if he was red carded, you may have a thing about saying, well, this is maybe just a bit too harsh, but, you know, other than that, it just seemed to be a bit of a kind of an artificial construct just because people were unhappy with a yellow card.
Yeah, Tom, look, I suppose it draws a line under what has been an absolutely mammoth season for Irish rugby. Grand Slam, Five Nations, Triple Crown, Pro 14, and Champions Cup titles in the hands of Leinster, you know, albeit that hard for us to admit, but we still have to acknowledge that was a super season for Leinster. And, you know, Munster, I suppose, getting close, but still going in the right direction despite despite not getting over the line in the semi-finals of the Champions and Cup and in the Pro 14. Tom, it really has been a superb season for Irish rugby. And look, the players will head away now. They'll have not too long of a break. If I'm, the pre-season will start, I suppose, for a lot of the guys who have been involved in the Test series, they will probably get a bit more of a break. But they will they'll enjoy some time now, but not too much. And you know, it's coming up until July. You can almost kind of taste the anticipation for the new season already coming around the corner from with regards to the provincial club seasons.
The interest is very high. I think that this successful season in Irish rugby is only going to generate more interest, more anticipation for the season to come. Pro 14, you know, a lot of people are like really getting into that. You know, you have to look at the Champions Cup draws just being there. Like, there's a lots of stuff to go on that rugby is in a very good place in Ireland. You know, and we just have to kind of just, you know, drive it on and keep it going now, because when you get success, the only thing that turns people off then is a relative lack of success. I think that it's Ireland, you know, can only, you know, go down from here with regards to literally winning every trophy that would have been available to them this year. But, you know, if they can keep up the standards, keep up the, you know, the impressive wins over the course of the season for both, you know, the national team and the provinces, you know, the All Blacks is the next one that's on the horizon now, never mind the Champions Cup and everything that comes with that. You know, it's just one of those ones where, you know, the excitement and the level of rugby in the country will only continue to build, but we have to keep the show on the road with wins. That's how it goes. And I think everybody knows that. And that's kind of the, you know, where Ireland can look to try and, you know, continue, win at all costs, really, which is, that's what keeps the whole show on the road. And, you know, not just losing for the sake of whatever principle, because look, Irish rugby is in a great place, but it's in a great place right now because we're winning. And that has to continue.
Yep, it sure does, Tom. Tom, tell us a little bit more about what's coming up on Three Red Kings this week.
Yeah, on Three Red Kings this week, I've got a couple of different articles. I'll be looking at Ireland's overall season in our series in Australia in numbers, looking at the impressive performers from a, you know, an actual statistical point of view. I'll be looking at the big winners and losers of the season or of the series down there, who furthered their cause for the World Cup selection, who maybe drifted back a little bit. And then I'll be looking at the Ireland's Mall, Ireland's pack in the 22, and how we approach the breakdown in this game after responding to the challenges of the last two games. That's all coming up this week on patreon.com/Three Red Kings for just €2 a month.